Hey, Dee, remember last week when you mentioned weedables as a term for edible weeds?
Yes, I do. I remember.
Well, I looked it up.
How'd that go?
I looked it up. I did some searching because I thought I was going to write a blog post. But guess what it is used for, Dee?
I can make a guess because I know it's in our notes and we've talked about it, but I'll just say what? What is it, Carol?
It's marijuana, the Mary Jane, the pot. It's...
Yes, which Oklahoma is covered up in now. Yep. Well, we aren't going to use that term to mean weeds you can eat, although technically I guess you can eat them in a gummy.
I guess. So we are not going to do that. We're going to skip it. We're going to move on to this week's episode, and I'm going to get us started. Welcome to The Garden Angelist, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
And I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden an acre and a half out of 7.5 acres out in the country.
We call ourselves garden angelists because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, the truthful, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode, which is a very interesting episode, mostly because of you. You took some stuff I took and did, and then you added on to it. You did a good job. Tell me about your garden, though.
Well, I will, but I'm just dying to tell you one more joke.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
What does a nut sound like when it sneezes?
Achoo.
Cashew.
Hit you.
Cashew.
I get it. Cashew. Cute. That's a cute one.
Thank you.
Maddie would like that one. So, what have you been doing?
So, we had a week that was the proverbial roller coaster, as they say. I went out, I think it was Tuesday. I got the sunflowers and zinnias that I'd piled on one of the beds. I got those all cleaned off in the compost pile, which is now like stacked to the sky. But anyway, that's where lettuce and peas are going to go. So I got that all cleaned off. I started seeds for my onions, 6 varieties. All of them are germinating. The midweek, Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, we had a wicked storm come through. And then it got really cold after it was record high on, I think it was a record high on Tuesday. Anyway, and I accidentally bought an orchid at the grocery store. And that's okay. That's enough. What did you do?
Wow. You were busy. I worked in the garden and in the greenhouse and I repotted some seedlings, which I need to go out there and check to see how the water situation is because it's been really warm. We had that one dip down day.
Yeah.
Well, really 2 days. And then it got really warm. And so, you know, stuff dries out in the greenhouse fast. And then let's see, it's extremely warm for March. It's more like late April. And guess what? The turkey vultures are back. When the turkey vultures come back to Oklahoma, that usually means no more freezes. And also our trees are starting to bud out, the native trees. This is extremely early.
It sounds extremely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I remember times where, you know, it's the end of March, and the turkey vultures come back, but they're here. So I don't know. Anyway, so then I worked in the garden. And then yesterday, I went and overdid it, helping Brennan in his new shrub and grass border. It was really a rehab. And I did a little video about it, which we'll talk more about later.
That we will. So got to be a lot of favorites this week with things going crazy and warming up and spring starting. What you got?
Yeah. Well, my favorite is my front flower border. I mean, I got it cleaned up, and so it looks really good. And there's daffodils and hellebores and orange blotch pansies, and it's really blooming. Now, my Jane magnolia, my deciduous magnolia, it got hit by that freeze, which often happens.
Yes.
Which makes it look kind of bad. But here's the thing. It's getting ready to put out more blooms because it doesn't do them all at once.
Right.
It has a staggered bloom. And so I think it'll be really pretty. It won't be as pretty as some years, but that's okay. So how about you?
Well, there are a lot of choices. And my front border is just covered now with the reticulated iris. And oh, I do need to do a lot of digging and dividing. I just have large clumps of them after several years. But I'm going to go back to the backyard where the darker purple crocuses are coming up in the lawn. And I always kind of forget that they come up a little bit later. So
yeah,
tons are fading, but the dark purples are coming on. So that is my new favorite this week.
Ooh, I want to see a picture of that. because I saw a light purple and they were really pretty.
I will put it in the newsletter.
Yay. Okay, so why don't you do that next quote?
I am going to make everything around me beautiful. That will be my life. Elsie Dilwoof. And I did not look up who she was, but
I like her idea, though.
I do, too.
I think that's awesome. So for our flower this week, we decided to do yarrow, which is the 2024 herb of the year. Is that from National Garden Bureau?
That is from the International Herb Society. iHerb.org. The
International Herb Society. Oh, I see it right here. iHerb.org. So I grow several varieties of yarrow, but I have the native one, which is up in the upper pasture.
Is it the
everywhere?
Achillea millifolium?
Yeah, I'm sure it's Achillea millifolium. It's the white one, right? Just the basic white one. And then I have a yellow one that grows in my lower garden. It's been there for years and years and years. Bluish gray foliage, yellow flowers. I've tried to grow all the fancy ones. I've had mixed luck, but this year I'm starting a group of yarrow that are called, they're called Fruit Bowl. Have you heard of those?
I have not heard of those.
I started the seeds in my greenhouse and we'll see what happens.
Well, I'm going to say that when you described yarrow, you immediately went to all the different flowers in your garden because most people are not going to think about this as an herb. So that was kind of surprising.
But it is.
Yeah. In the past, it was known as wound wart because the wart suffix is anything that's traditionally an herbal medicine that's for treatment. And this one was for the treatment of wounds because it can stop bleeding because the leaves, which are very tiny, that's where you get that millifolium, very tiny leaves, tiny flowers that are all clustered together. Anyway, I do not plan to crush any yarrow to reduce. I hope I never have to stop bleeding with yarrow. Let's just put it that way. And no,
yeah, you would have to gather up all the leaves, wrap them up and crush them to get the tannins to come out and then put them on your wound. And people also use lamb's ear. So, you know, think about this. These are both plants that have silvery leaves.
Yes.
Who are fragrant when crushed and have little hairs on them. And so I can see where they might be able to stop some wound problems. And if you're out in the middle of nowhere, out on the prairie, and you see some yarrow and you're bleeding, you'd use it then, yes?
Yes. Yes, if I found myself in that situation. So we should mention...
I was thinking about like if we were native or something back in the old days.
Well, let's talk about that. That grayish green foliage is not like lavender, but it's kind of the same color family. Both are very drought tolerant. Yarrow grows basically in very poor soil where not much else will grow. You could try yarrow and it would probably do all right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can grow. Yarrow's not hard to grow. I'm just going to say it's not at all.
It's deer resistant.
Unless it's a really, really fancy one.
Yeah.
Well, and most silvery plants are deer resistant, almost all of them. So
they're attractive to butterflies and other beneficial pollinators.
Yep. They're a good little plant. They're really good in pollinator gardens, also in meadow gardens, which is where mine's growing. I found some in Brennan's Bermuda lawn yesterday, actually. I said, oh, Brennan, that's yarrow.
You know what? There's a little patch of yarrow in a spot in my back lawn. And I'm over that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you poor little yarrow, you never get very big, but you're in there in the lawn.
You're hanging in there.
Hanging in there. Yeah. I think I should really, after all these years, I should transplant you into a place and let's see what you got.
Yeah, mine grow quite large and they get big and white and they bloom for a little while and we have lots of butterflies, lots of bees. And then they, you know, the seed heads dry and I don't mow them down until way, way later. So you've written also some really good stuff. Oh yeah, I guess if I deadheaded it, it'd rebloom, but that ain't gonna happen.
Well, they are extremely long blooming anyway. And so there are new introductions that they've selected for like the compact habit, stronger stems, because they can get a little bit floppy. And
they're floppy. Yeah.
I have some that are yellowish pink, and then I have some that are like I call them a raspberry red. Mm-hmm. And again, I was going to look up and I forgot to. Over in Great Britain, does anybody over there have like a national collection of yarrow?
I don't know.
I'm going to guess not.
Probably. I mean, it's a native wildflower of the United States, so... And I think it actually grows in other parts of the world too, because we did a whole thing on Euro one other time where we talked about millefolium and how it grew in other places, but don't quote me on that. Okay. So I got a trial plant of Euro years ago and it was called paprika. And that was a really good plant and it lasted a really long time, but then eventually it just died out. Is there anything else you want to say about Euro?
I do want to say another thing about Euro. I'm looking up the National Plant Collections.
Of course you are.
And so I'm going to just do a quick search for yarrow to see if somebody, because in Great Britain, I mean, they think that fleabane is a great perennial to put in your garden. And I'm like, I just keep pulling it out as an old weed.
I have it as a weed and I actually let it bloom a little bit. And then I start pulling it out because it will take over. But it is a good butterfly plant. The native plant people like fleabane. And the Brits like Mexican fleabane, which is the really pretty one that has all the different colors.
Well, I'm not saying these gardens have a yarrow collection, but when I do a search on yarrow, there are all kinds of gardens that show up. I don't know if they show up because they have a national collection or if they show up because they have yarrow in their garden.
I bet they just have yarrow in their garden because I've seen it on Gardener's World before.
You know,
all right, I think we're done.
Well, no,
right?
One other thing. You know where else yarrow would do good?
What?
In a gravel garden.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely.
All right.
It would do great.
So anyway.
Ready for that next quote?
I am ready for the next quote.
Live in each season as it passes. Breathe the air, drink the drink, taste the fruit, and resign yourself to the influence of the earth. Henry David Thoreau from Walden.
That actually is good advice.
It is very good advice. I mean, Thoreau had some great advice. He really did.
Like, this isn't the time of year to go make yourself, say, butternut squash soup. I mean, that's a winter fall kind of soup.
Yeah, I'm not in the mood for butternut squash soup right now. Although I ate some of it this winter.
You're probably not in the mood to talk about the National Gardening Bureau has proclaimed this to be, and this is our last year of the squash.
Okay, we've talked about squash a lot, and I see that you wrote squash again. Yeah, you can talk about what squash is going to grow for 2024, which is going to be summer squash.
Yes.
Go.
So I'm growing Black Beauty, which is a classic, Burpee's Golden Zucchini, and Italian Rib Zucchini. And those are packets that I was able to buy at Menards when they were discounted. And then, you know, I've been reading Dorothy Giles too much. The Little Kitchen Garden, 1926, she listed golden summer crookneck.
Which would be early summer crookneck, right? Which is an heirloom.
Early golden summer crookneck. And I got it from Southern Exposure Seed Exchange.
I bought that over and over again. I mean, I've grown that. So it's interesting you bring that one up because that is one that resists squash bugs along with gray zucchini better than others do.
I did not know that.
And one of the reasons that the early summer crookneck it's all the same squash. It has a really tough rind. And I just don't think they like it as much as they do some of the more tender squashes. And when you harvest it early, it's still fantastic and delicious. And it's really good fried. But it just gets harder faster, and I just don't think they like it. And then since I'm talking about this topic, the only other one I would grow at this point in my life, because I hate squash bugs, and there's such a huge problem here. And you remember when I had that Vegapod thing that had the cover? I still have it, and I actually found the clips for it today when I was cleaning out a drawer. But I don't really want to haul it back down here again and go through all that because it was a lot of work. And it wasn't pretty. You know what I mean? I like pretty. Pretty's important.
Pretty. In my garden. Pretty is important.
But on the other hand, it did work because you kept it covered, but then you had to take it off so that you could pollinate the squash. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
It's complicated.
It is.
I digressed. I'm sorry.
If you decide to cover your squash to keep the squash bugs away, you do have to figure out a way to pollinate that squash because it needs the bees or it needs you.
Yeah, and it's not hard to pollinate. It's just it takes more time and you're already busy and you're already trying to keep the squash bugs off. I'm not saying you can't do it. You can. But if I'm going to grow summer squash, to get back what I was actually saying, I'd grow gray zucchini or I'd grow early crookneck.
All right. And then I'm not growing cue ball. And this is the first time in a long time I haven't grown cue ball.
Yeah, you love cue ball.
I do. And the first article I ever wrote for a magazine was for Horticulture. And it was about cue ball squash, mm-hmm. all of 400 words. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think if that was
400 words.
It was 2009, I think.
That was back when we used to get articles for 2000. You know, like you get a 400-word article on one item. Now we're expected to write them so fast about 42 things. Here's 200 words. Well, why not? Why aren't you growing cue ball?
Because I don't have the seeds. And I thought, I can't grow something else. I've got four varieties already.
How much more squash, right? Yeah, you got a lot
and
of
I'm
squash.
And I'm just doing one of each, one hill of each. So
that's a lot of squash if it all comes in, you know. And that's the thing. And here, a lot of people use pesticides. I'm just telling you the truth. That's how they're able to grow it here. And I don't want to. So I don't grow a lot of it.
I'm not going to.
I buy organic squash at the store.
Here's what will happen in my garden. Mm-hmm. I'll plant the squash. I'll get some nice harvest. I'll see squash mm-hmm. bugs. And I'll yank the plants out and move on.
Yeah. And that's what you need to do. And then plant them in a totally different place the next time, next year, because they overwinter. They're just obnoxious creatures. And then there's also squash vine borers. I just don't have too much trouble with those here. Do you?
Not terribly often. No. Mm-mm.
Okay. And then we don't really grow winter squash. And here's why. Winter squash takes a really long time.
It does.
And it takes a lot of attention to get them through the whole season. And by that time, I've got squash bugs so bad. And also, we should point out that pumpkins are squash. And so people ask me this question every year. They're like, oh my gosh, what's on my pumpkins? And I'm like, squash bugs and squash vine borers. Because winter squash and pumpkins seem to have a lot of trouble with squash vine borers. Right. So.
And so neither one of us are going to bother.
No, it's just too much trouble. There's other things to grow, like green beans. And I found a whole packet of green bean seeds for Jade in my drawer.
Awesome. I'm going to do the quote and take us into our book. In the winter, I think green thoughts and I dream of roses. That is Christy Purifoy.
Yes, we took it from her book because we loved that quote. So I found this book. It's called Garden Maker, Growing a Life of Beauty and Wonder with Flowers by Christy Purifoy. And I found it at the library. And then you went and found it on Kindle at the library.
I did. I've got mine checked out.
On Libby.
Yes, I got it on, well, you check it out via Libby, and then it's a Kindle book. And so I clipped a couple of different quotes, and mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. It's just a very...
It's so sweet.
It's a sweet...
Sweet book.
And it's not very long. And I'm sure if you got the mm-hmm. actual physical book like you did, you can see the pretty pictures and...
Yeah, there are beautiful pictures, but her words are beautiful. She's an English major, and you can tell.
Yeah.
Because... She's just a really good writer. And it's interesting because you don't go over on Facebook very much, but Marie Reith, who listens to us regularly, she actually posted about this on our group because, you know, I did a little thing where I just did it in my story uh-huh. on Instagram. Well, she picked it up and actually read it and before we even talked about it. And she loved it. And I'm 3/4 of the way through. I had to stop. I had some sickness this week from the alpha gal hill. And so I kind of got behind on it, but I'm going to finish it today because it's worth finishing and it's a beautiful book.
It is. And let me give you some of the quotes that I got from the book because I was able to clip them right onto my phone. In my flower garden, I am the weaver of stories. In my flower garden, I am the composer of seasonal songs.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful writing. Next.
I cannot recommend flower gardening for the sober-minded. I cannot recommend it for those afraid of mysterious rabbit holes who prefer to keep their two feet fixed firmly to a clean and solid and entirely predictable floor. I cannot, in good conscience, recommend intoxicating moonflowers or romantic roses to anyone who values utility and efficiency and productivity above all.
Yes, that whole section, I read the whole section on roses, and I thought it was one of the prettiest pieces that has been written on roses in a while.
Yes.
And this is not a new book. This book has been out for a little while. She does have a new one coming out about her home.
Yeah.
So
Seed Time and Harvest, I think it's called.
Something like that.
Garden rules are only guides and there's an exception to every rule. That is us, Dee.
That is totally us. And it should be totally anybody who gardens, because there are lots of rules. And you know what? You need to do what works for you.
Exactly. And here's another one. Of course, if deadheading sounds like a hassle and a chore, simply rename it cutting flowers for the house and the result will be the same. More flowers.
I like it.
And you'll get to enjoy them inside.
That's right. And that's a lot of fun. I cut some of my daffodils and brought them inside. That was fun.
So the book is Garden Maker, Growing a Life of Beauty and Wonder with Flowers by Christy Purifoy, as found at the library by D. Nash and also checked out by me.
We found several at the library. That was a good week when I went to the library. Okay, you ready for a quote to take us into dirt?
I am.
Always laugh when you can. It is cheap medicine, Lord Byron. Okay, so the dirt. You took the dirt from my little thing yesterday. And then you expanded on it.
The whole universe was sending me information about what should you, mulching your beds, mulching your trees. And so the bad is you had the really good reel yesterday that just showed how horrible landscape fabric is.
Ugh.
The putting rocks on it, or God forbid, rubber tire mulch. And you showed, I mean, you, Brennan, I'm sure did a lot of the work, but getting that all out of there.
We did it together.
That's hard work.
Well, it was only, thank goodness, they had only put it. So I've gotten so many questions about this, and we'll link to it. It actually went kind of viral. I didn't realize people felt as strongly about landscape fabric as I did. But we got down in one end of this border that we were working on yesterday. And I have to think that that's where the rocks originally were. And they put the landscape fabric underneath it and had a little rock thing there that maybe you could put a pot on. But it had been sitting there for 13 years, because that's how old Brennan's house is. And we start pulling that stuff up, and the Bermuda grass had gotten into it and the rocks on top of it. And I said, we are doing a video, because people need to see what happens when they do this. And that's how that got started. And then we talked about mulch, what kind of mulch you should really use.
Yes. And we're going to just say it, arborist chips for the win.
They're the best. Now, they're hard for people to get sometimes. And if you can't get them, you can get bagged arborist chips. That are here, we can get some from a company called Happy Glow or Happy Grow, spelled GRO, HAPIGRO. And you can buy them at Lowe's. And they actually call it compost, but that's not what it is. It's arborist chips. I know my chips, you know?
Right. I need to go to like Lowe's and Menards and look at all the different bags they have and figure out what's really going on here. But the other bad, now this is really going to get people.
Here we go.
Yeah. So there was a brand.
Somebody brought it up yesterday.
Brand new blog post. Up. The Garden Professors, Linda Chalker Scott, leading the way. Cardboard mulch is not a good thing, and people show all the time. Layer of cardboard, put some
layer mulch on top.
Mulch, dirt, whatever. And I think that I've even written that on Family Handyman, but I think it's wrong, because first of all,
but. Explain what the deal is with the cardboard. I mean, it's not the most efficient thing you can do, but is it a terrible thing to do?
Well, if you read,
I haven't read this yet.
If you read the Garden Professors, what they'll tell you, and I'm just going to summarize really quick, because we don't want to spend forever on it.
Right.
Number one, there's no such thing as clean cardboard. They are all coated with crap.
That would be the bad. Okay, so that's the bad part.
You can end up with all kinds of crap that you've introduced into your soil that will never go away.
Oh,
okay. Number two is it can lead to anaerobic conditions where that water, especially if there's like a waxy coating on it, and you know, well, I won't use the one with waxy coating. Good luck to that. The water can't get down, the air can't get back up. And so your dirt, it would be like, it would start to turn blue almost.
It's like landscape fabric.
Only worse.
Because when you lay it on there, nothing can get below it. And so when you pull that stuff up and you look, it's hard as a rock under there. And we found, you know what we found in that soil, that bad soil?
What?
We found a few grubs. Because they were eating the roots of the nasty Bermuda grass. We didn't find, in that whole entire border, we found one earthworm.
See?
One.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I suspect this is the same problem. So let's quickly talk about arborist chips, why they're so great. They're so great because it's the whole tree and it's also leaves. And so you aren't just getting bark, because a lot of people wrote me and said, I love bark chips. And I said, so do I. They're so pretty. However, they have resin on them. And so that's why they float. And it's also why water runs off of them. And it's why it takes them a long, long time to decay. You want stuff that decays down into your soil that the earthworms and other creatures pull down and create mycorrhizae. And if you really want to prove it to yourself and you use arborist chips or a really good chipped mulch, even if it's bagged, I think arborists are better, but if you can only find bagged, if you do that and you look at it, oh, just a few months later and you lift it up, you'll see all that beautiful mycorrhizae under there.
Yes. Which takes me to the next part of the dirt. So, and
good. I'm glad I helped.
Our listeners are probably not going to be able to access this unless they are members of GardenCom. But GardenCom had a webinar, and it's one you had to pay for, with Dr. Glenn Percival of Bartlett Tree Experts. And this guy is from Great Britain, and he's just been in the United States for about a year. But he talked about all the experience that they've had combating actual diseases in like fruit trees and the health of trees when they use the arborist chips and the importance of mycorrhizae for trees.
Right.
And some of the treatments that they're doing, where they show over the course of like 2 to 3 years, a tree that was in decline is suddenly doing very well. And he actually worked in the gardens of Buckingham Palace, and he showed this, and I forget which kind of trees they were, but there was, you know, one planted by Queen Victoria, one planted by Prince Albert. And so they were in decline, and they did stuff with arborist trips and mycorrhizae and all kinds of stuff, and they're much healthier now. So
interesting.
I'm going to, you know, over the course of time, he doesn't seem to have a lot published publicly on the internet, but I'm going to look for more of his articles and stuff, because mulching with arborist chips and stuff, and talked about like willow tree chips.
Because willow has that acid in it.
Aspirin
and stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was just amazing. And so anyway,
salicylic acid.
Not to get over.
Yeah, that is amazing.
In this dirt. One last thing.
It's pretty geeky, but that's okay. Now you're going to talk about chop and drop, right?
Yes. And I've seen this method used. My neighbor growing up, he did this all the time.
I do it too.
Deadhead and just chop, chop, chop and drop it in the ground. There's an Instagram reel of a guy that talks about how much time it saves him and shows how his dirt looks. We also talked about this for Brooklyn Bridge Park. And years ago, Margaret Roach had a podcast episode. We've never forgotten that chop and drop method. And so I haven't really got going on my perennial beds, but I'm really going to get out there and chop and drop. And remember that mulching machine that I got years ago to review, and you can't get it anymore?
Yeah.
It drops everything into a bin. I'm going to just chunk everything in there, and then you can take that bin, and I've done this, and then just cast that around. So I'm just returning it back to the soil. Anyway.
And so for people who don't have a chopper that's easily accessible, you chop it about 6 inches. That's about the size of your pieces. It takes a little more time as you're doing it, but it really does. I mean, I do it all the time now. And I do it when I deadhead, but I will not do it for my roses, because roses have diseases and stuff. And
well, that's the qualifier.
It's just not, and thorns. Yeah. I mean, there's certain things I wouldn't do it with certain things, but with a lot of things, sure. A lot of my stuff I would.
But yeah, the roses are the one thing, because they are so disease prone. The other thing you could try, and I don't know how well it'll work, but it kind of works for me sometimes, is if you have a mulching mower and you run over that stuff a couple of times, you may be able to grind it up enough even to leave it on the lawn. It's up to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was our dirt about dirt.
It was a good one.
Here's a quote.
It was a really good one.
Quote for the rabbit holes. When you write things down, they sometimes take you places you hadn't planned. Melanie Benjamin.
Yeah, that's for sure.
She's the historical novelist who we read her book, The Swans of Fifth Avenue, we talked about last week.
Which we loved. I loved that book. I read it and I listened to it too. You want me to do my rabbit hole first?
Yes, please.
Okay, so in connection with my version of alpha gal. I mean, not everybody gets as sick as me, but apparently I'm special. So I'm really, really sensitive to medications and any kind of mammalian medications. And there's this great website that is called Vegan Med, where you can look up OTC medications and they can tell you whether they are made with fully vegan sources. And I know people are going, huh? So a lot of our medications have inactive ingredients that have mammal in them. And that's as much as we have to say about that. But in the process of that, I found Genexa OTC medications, and it's a group that was founded on the West Coast by David Johnson and Max Spielberg, okay? They're now based in Atlanta, and they moved during the pandemic. And they were two dads who looked at, they were looking at the medications that their kids were being given,
right?
And they realized they had Red 40 in them and a lot of things that little kids can be allergic to or, you know, don't really need, and they can have potential allergens. So they said they realized as many as 93% of all drugs contain potential allergens. So they decided they were going to make medications that are allergen free as they can. And their driving philosophy is people over everything. Are they the cheapest medications on the market? No, but they're not that expensive. And somehow these guys got all their medications in CVS, Walgreens, Walmart. So when you're looking at the plethora of big names, if you see a white box, and I'll take a picture of one of the white boxes for a newsletter. If you see a white box and it says Genexa on it, that is one of their medications. And they're usually right with the other ones, or you can order them off of Amazon. And I take their Tylenol, acetaminophen, actually, because Tylenol is a brand name. I take their kids' medicines. They're really good medicines. So I just thought people would enjoy that because it's a nice thing to know. Whether you're allergic or not, supporting a local company, I mean, a company from the United States that's all of it's made here, that's cool too. How about you?
I'm going to send that information to my sisters who have grandchildren because I think they would appreciate knowing that.
Mm-hmm. They make adult and children, but they started out with children's first. And you can also take the children's medication as an adult. And I'm telling you, tracing medications is really hard. I spent a good time the other day tracing down glycerin because most of it's made from mammal, but there's a lot of vegetable glycerin too. So you have to trace it down. It's weird. All right. Anyway, what about you?
Well, I did another lost lady last week. This time it's Buckner Hollingsworth, who is...
I remember her.
Well, she's most fascinating. Well, she wrote a sweet book. And then The most fascinating thing about her is her sister, Mary Kirk Simpson, was the other woman who stepped out with Wallace Simpson's husband so that she could then sue him for divorce as the wrong woman. And then Mary ended up marrying Wallace Simpson's ex-husband.
That's funny.
And so that...
I mean, it's not funny. It's kind of sad, but whatever.
Well, and you know, when I first wrote about Buckner, it was 10 years ago, and you could not find information about Mary Kirk Simpson. But I actually found, and it's embedded in my Substack, I found a really in-depth article about Mary Kirk Simpson on a site called Airmail, and it's by the former editor of Vanity Fair has started this. I did have to sign up, and then it's like, please stop sending me emails. I just wanted the one article.
Yes, I used to be part of that too, and it just sent me so much stuff that I was like, I can't do it, but it was interesting.
So anyway, that was my first rabbit hole, but the real rabbit hole was, it's solar eclipse update time.
You know what? And funny about this, I've got a magazine here. Keep going.
So anyway, well, no, you have to be sitting in front of me. You can't leave the computer like that. Because I have ordered the eclipse on your Oklahoma Today magazine.
Yes, which my husband brought home to me and said, and it's got Bigfoot on it because that part of the state will be 100% eclipsed, which is the southeastern part of the state. I'm in an area that is 90%.
So I'm in an area that is pretty darn 100%. So anyway, look what I got. Woo-hoo. Look. I can't see.
You didn't buy me any.
I know. I can't see anything right now because these eclipse sunglasses. But if I look out the window, where's the sun? Oh, I did. The sun's not out the window anymore.
We have got to put this on YouTube. Anyway. I mean, you've got to put this visual.
Well, I bought these for Easter baskets, even though I'm guessing all of the kids, by the time Easter arrives a week before the big eclipse, they'll probably already have their their eclipse sunglasses. But I got enough extra for me, for anybody.
You should send me one. You should send me. I'll wear them.
Don't you think you can find?
Yeah, I'm sure I can.
So anyway, so that's the first thing. The second thing is I found this YouTube video, or it found me, I don't know which, but it's by a guy called Smarter Every Day. I've never seen somebody, he has 11.4 million followers on YouTube. I've never seen somebody with that many.
Mm.
Anyway, he did a fascinating YouTube with a guy that is solar eclipse obsessed, and they went through all the different things that'll happen and what you can see. And then he's got a whole other list of videos from 2017 when he went out to, I think it was Wyoming for some eclipse viewing. And listeners, Dee is leaned back in her chair like, are we done yet? Are we done yet?
Well, I just had to hear about it this morning from Bill again. He was like, you're not even excited. And I said, and he said, it doesn't happen every day. It's a once in a lifetime deal. I said, Bill, every day you go out and there's a new flower. It's a once in a lifetime deal.
Okay. All right. But if you watch these videos, these guys will tell you that it's more than a once in a lifetime deal. And it literally, to live where there's going to be this full solar eclipse in your lifetime usually happens once, if at all. So here's the other thing.
Uh-huh.
I was reminded from the video that the guy that was the guest on there that was all excited, he has an app. It's called Solar Eclipse Timer. And I remember I downloaded it in 2017 when we had the partial eclipse.
Yes, I remember.
Mm-hmm. So I've re-downloaded it and I paid $1.99 to get the alerts on the day. So it's going to tell me when it's like safe to take off my eclipse viewing glasses and look at it because, you know, you can't see the sun. And then it'll tell me when to... Obviously, I don't know when to put them back on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of exciting.
That is exciting, I think. Yeah, it's awesome.
So anyway, I'll put a link to Solar Eclipse Timer to that website as well.
Yeah, do, because I think I will put that on my phone and I'll put it on Bill's phone because Bill is really excited. And he was like, we should go down to southeastern Oklahoma so we can be in 100%. And I was like, you and everyone else in Oklahoma is going down there. I said, 90 is good enough for me.
Well, So here's the thing. I was really going to talk about this next week.
Oh,
but there's a lot of places in Indianapolis, and I've said this before, that are opening up big areas where you can go and watch with a crowd.
Yeah.
And so now I'm thinking, no, I'm not doing that. But now I'm thinking, well, where is my best place? I'm probably just, if I go and stand in the middle of the street faces west and dead ends into a pasture. That's my best place to view. Dee, you got to get excited about it. But if you're not.
I can't. I'm trying.
Okay.
But I just don't care.
You're the 1%. Go ahead and tell us what you're doing in your garden.
There's got to be more. I want to know if any of our listeners don't care. Just somebody write in. Just some person write in and tell me that they don't care.
Nobody write All in. Right. Okay. What are you doing in your garden?
I don't know. I got to get over this stuff I got going on. And then I'll know. I'll tell you guys next week, but it's time to put in seeds, some more seeds, and I got to go out and water in the greenhouse. I really do. And I've also got to, I got to look at some more stuff. What is the date? What date is it? We're still at the beginning of March. I don't do my tomatoes and stuff until the second week of March. So I got another week. Thank goodness.
Yeah, that's good. Cause I'm 11 weeks before frost free at the moment.
Yeah.
So I've got plenty of time for stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So by the time this episode comes out, I will have gone to the greenhouse. I would have bought violas and pansies. I will have brought them home and I will have potted them all up because today is Sunday and I've been texting with the greenhouse owner and she put some stuff on Facebook, but she didn't text me and say, come get them. And I was like, I don't want to come get them because I was kind of busy and I'm like, I don't have time to plant them. But Monday morning, I've already confirmed with her. I'll be heading down. Getting my violas and pansies, and that's my plan for Monday. And then we're both going to the Garden Bureau book event on Thursday night, and our listeners have Tuesday and Wednesday when this comes out to register. That's going to be really fun.
And go over it one more time about what it is.
Okay. So the National Garden Bureau, don't ask me to remember all the authors.
No, not all of that them. Was there's in, several.
Yeah, there are several authors out there. And so
they're garden authors.
Yeah, they write gardening books and stuff. And so they are going to be on a free webinar. And I thought I'd look back in our show notes because I can.
And you can even chat with the authors. So like there'll be a beginning thing and then they're going to have us go into rooms and we are room moderators, basically.
Yes, right? We are room moderators. Yes.
Which I don't even know what that entails, but it'll be fine. We'll figure it out.
Well, we're going to have a practice session, so you'll know what it entails.
It's a good thing because I really don't know what it entails. But we'll
all of our listeners should sign up on Tuesday, Wednesday and come. Yeah. And if nothing else, I mean, come into the rooms where we're moderating and be nice.
Yeah, be nice and ask questions. That would help. Okay. Ready to wrap this up?
I am ready to wrap this up. Thank you for listening to The Garden Angelus. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
If you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review that helps us get noticed by others. Could you also share our podcast with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And subscribe to our Substack newsletter, The Garden Angelus at Substack.com, which is free. And it's also linked to in our show notes. And if you do, you'll get a link to listen to the podcast a whole day early.
If you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we're in a small commission and it costs you nothing.
Or you can set up a monthly subscription through Buzzsprout or make a one-time donation through PayPal.
Thank you to everyone who has done so.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the garden gate. Bye until next week's Eclipse Update.
Bye.